Tell me about the day itself.
Very vivid, really. Friday was normally a sort of day off, and I remember at 8:25 or so, my church warden at St. Saviour's actually rang me, because he lived down in Lower Wharm, and he said, "Bruce," he said, "there's been rather a large bang behind me, and I know your mother lives near. Perhaps you'd like to ring her." So she actually lived in Wolf Court in Canada Road, and so I rang her immediately, and she said, "Yes," in her inimitable Scottish voice. "There was a loud bang, but I'm still having my breakfast." And so, and then I began to hear, because we were up in Upper Warmer, the odd siren of ambulances and police cars and so on, and I said to my wife Jenny, I said, "I think perhaps I ought just to sort of see what's going on." And I got down there, I suppose about 8:45, went into North Barracks, was allowed in, and didn't really leave there until 6 o'clock that night. And I don't quite know how quickly the day went or how slowly the day went. I just know that I was there all day. There were myriads of images, one of which was an absurd introduction that I made. I'd only a month or so before met Sir Martin Garrett, who was the Commandant General then, socially, and I didn't really know much about the Royal Marines. So when he said he was Commandant General, I said, "Are you the sort of Archbishop of Canterbury of the Royal Marines?" And he said, "Well, although he was a vicar's son," he said, "I've never actually seen myself quite like that, but yes, I suppose you could say that." Anyway, on the day, at about 10 o'clock, Martin turned up in full uniform, and we met and we chatted a bit, and some moments later, the Bishop of Maidstone turned up. Now, he was Bishop, this is David Smith, and he was Bishop to the Forces. And he saw me, and of course I knew him. I then introduced him to the Commandant General. I said, "Bishop," I said, "this is the Archbishop of Canterbury of the Royal Marines." And that has stuck in my memory as being a terribly stupid sort of thing to say, but one did it under those circumstances and with that sort of pressure. But anyway, it stayed, and they both laughed and all grinned, and then carried on themselves. And that was one image. That was very early on in the day. And then I suppose I oscillated between North Barracks itself, and also there was South Barracks, where some of the wives were being gathered together in the sergeant's mess, and some clergy were there, and I remember sort of going across to South Barracks and just generally being around talking with people, and particularly with the civilian staff, and also with some of the Royal Marines themselves, the youngsters. As the day wore on, I was very conscious of the press, the aggression of the press, the way in which, I think on the Strand, huge cranes were erected with aerial cameras and so on. I found that very intrusive. In fact, I that made me very, very angry. I seldom get angry, but that was appalling. I can remember some press invading North Barracks later that afternoon, and some of the civilian staff just screaming, "Get them out, get them out, get them away." And then I remember Richard Dixon at 4 o'clock. He had told the Royal Marines in the barracks to be in the drill hall at 4. And I remember I was in there with him, and he got up on a bench and he gave a speech which I shall never forget. Very inspiring, telling his men that the buggers won't win. He was going to give them the weekend off, and he wanted them all back on Monday morning on parade. And they were. And it was quite an extraordinary sort of dynamic to that gathering. It was a unique moment, and I thought Richard was absolutely outstanding as a leader. And then, I suppose, various other incidents where I met some of the helpers. There was one particular person, Pete Hudson, who had a far more intimate sort of impression of the day, because he was with a JCB and he was actually getting the concrete debris away from the mangled bodies and so on. And had a chat with him. And then I suppose at the end of the day, I came out of North Barracks, and this is my last memory of the day, really. I remember coming out, and there was a camera at South Barracks gate, and there were three people there, and as I left, the person came up to me and said, "Excuse me," he said, "have you been there?" And I said, "Yes, I have." I could tell he wasn't English. And he said, "Would you mind if we spoke to you, but you spoke to camera. I said, yeah, no, not at all. Tell me where you're from. So he said, well, we're Swedish Television. And I said, yes, I'd be happy to. So I told him a little bit about it. When I finally said goodbye to him, I said, thank you for being so sensitive, because that was the only television crew, the only media presence that showed any sort of sensitivity whatsoever.
And when you arrived so early, 8:45, what sort of atmosphere greeted you? Was it a feeling of calm and people getting on with it?
I think there was, one of the first people I met was actually Richard's wife, Tricia, who said, we think there's been a gas leak, a gas explosion. And there was a certain amount of pandemonium. I mean, there was a certain amount of rushing around. And at that stage, my own impression was that people just didn't know. People were hoping that it was a gas explosion, but actually then Tricia said about an hour or so later, well, of course, that's nonsense, because there's no gas in that building. You know. So, and then that gradual truth, the horror of a bomb, and it had to be an IRA bomb, actually planted there at a time that was going to be the most lethal. It was a process of gradual hauling it into one's consciousness, and I think that took time.